through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on Jake and Stacy is ESPN NBA reporter Brian Windhorst. Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Brian, no surprise here, but we are always incredibly interested in any news about NBA expansion. But we are just used to kind of having our hearts broken with this one. So I wanted to talk about just the general likelihood, especially considering the timeline. What do you think the likelihood of expansion is over the next 5 years?
Yeah, I wish I could give you a really firm answer, and I know this is a frustrating thing. I or a colleague of mine has asked Adam Silver annually for the last, 5 years, what is the update with an expansion? What is the update? And he's given the same answer, which is not on the horizon, over and over. And he changed his answer, as you are well aware, last month. And that, frankly, lit a bunch of fires. And over the last few weeks, the league office has simultaneously continued to feed that fire and also tried to back off of it. So Adam has had conversations, and people in the league office have had conversations with people who may be interested in investing or being a part of expansion teams in Seattle, especially as the mayor gave in an interview yesterday. And at the same time, trying to tell people this is not necessarily happening, back off. So what I will tell you is this, is that historically, the NBA has expanded coming off times where there's been some financial hardship for the league. And I think there are people at the league office who would square up with me and want to really duke it out with me if I implied that just because they're having some financial difficulties that they would expand to buy their way out of it. So I don't necessarily want to qualify it with that. But again, historically, if you go back and look at the expansions in the 70s, in the 80s, and the 90s, it came when the league could use some influx of money, and expansion is a way to get fast money. And so I think the conditions are more favorable than they've been in a long time for this to happen.
So, Brian, it's interesting as you talk about that conflict that the NBA seems to be in, that clearly this is a route that they do want to go down at some point, just how soon, right? And when you look back at some of those decisions that they've made due to financial losses, and obviously they've suffered some big losses here during the pandemic, would it be beneficial to the league to recoup some of these losses 5 years from now? Or would it be more logical that it would happen maybe sooner than that, 2 to 3 years? I know you can't give a definitive timeline, but just talking through some of that, it seems weird that you would want to recoup some losses 5 years down the road.
Well, it's all negotiable about when you would get paid. You know, see, I think the thing that you can play with language here is you can expand in 3 years, but you can make the decision on the expansion in a year. Mm. So I can say to you, we're not expanding for years. And that'd be a true statement. And also, we'd be working towards expansion right now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
totally.
So both things can be true. What I would say is this. When the NBA expands, I would be stunned if it's not Seattle. And Adam Silver is, moving in that direction. So if there was some sort of stock that I could buy, that there will be a Seattle Supersonics back in the medium to long term, I would buy that stock. I feel stronger about that than I ever have. Of course, that doesn't help you if you want to watch a Sonics game in 2023. I can't promise you that today.
Come on, Brian. Come on.
Brian, I appreciate it, Brian. It's making me feel better. You know, while we're kind of looking at a couple of those cities, I've also assumed it's kind of just this foregone conclusion that Seattle is going to be one of those. But what is maybe the second city or the handful of cities that are, I guess, at the forefront of that conversation when it comes to expansion?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that you need two things to have an NBA team. You need, you need an NBA-level arena. And that, there are certain cities out there that immediately qualify for that. And then the other thing is you need an ownership group that wants to put forth potentially several billion dollars to be in that city. And there are certain cities in this country where that makes sense because there's somebody in that city who's very wealthy and wants to do that, or there's certain cities in this country where even if an owner lives in another city, the economic situation is so fertile that they would want to be in that city. And so, you know, the league has been eyeing Mexico City for the last 4 or 5 years. They would love, I think, to have a team in Mexico City. They've tried to get a G League team going in Mexico City. It's just such a complicated situation for many different reasons. I don't think it's viable right now, but long term, I think the league would love to have that happen. So failing that, I think there's a couple of cities out there that meet the criteria. Las Vegas, Kansas City, Nashville, Tampa come to mind. Tampa and Nashville both bid to get the Toronto Raptors as their temporary home, ended up being in Tampa. Nashville has an NBA-level arena where the Predators play. Las Vegas, you know, there's some ownership groups there that showed interest in buying and relocating the Minnesota Timberwolves recently. The Timberwolves are not going to move, according to their owner who's selling the team, so it's moot. But so there's at least some ownership groups that are interested in doing it there. They do have an arena. Whether it's going to be adequate for the NBA, that would be seen. But certainly there's an arena there now that the NBA could play in. And obviously Seattle, although I think the arena situation in Seattle is something that would potentially be interesting, but certainly the arena that they're going to have is going to be a viable NBA arena. The Sonics could absolutely play there.
Brian, what would it mean to the NBA? We know what it means here in Seattle to be able to get NBA basketball back here. It would mean a whole heck of a lot for us. But what would it mean for the NBA to get basketball back in Seattle? Because it seems to be not just a conversation for Seattleites, but for players that have played here and know what it's like, coaches that have coached here in Seattle, what would it mean for just the league overall to be able to bring it back?
Well, yeah, I mean, nobody wanted to leave Seattle except for the Oklahoma City ownership group. the arena thing obviously contributed to it, but if the team had not been sold to the Oklahoma City group, they would not have left. I think that's fair to say. And so it wasn't like that they left because it wasn't viable, that it wasn't working. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, just from an economic standpoint, Seattle has become such an economic power that a league in the NBA that wants to be a growth league is kind of derelict not being in that market, just like the NFL was derelict for 20 years not being in Los Angeles. Is kind of insane that the NBA, that the NFL wasn't. And it's kind of insane that the NBA is not in Seattle. You know, I am from Cleveland. When I was 17 years old, the Cleveland Browns relocated to Baltimore. And so I am never going to be one who would ever, you know, say that relocation is ever a positive on a personal level. From a business level, the concept of wanting to keep a team in Sacramento versus putting them in Seattle was insane. Mm-hmm. Not that I want to hurt the city of Sacramento, but not moving that team then was insane from a business standpoint. And so with where Seattle is from a corporate standpoint, they would be such an asset to the NBA, not only because of a vibrant fan base, but because, frankly, money would come in from Seattle. You know, there's two kinds of NBA teams. There's teams that sort of take from the pot, you know, cities like Memphis, cities like Oklahoma City, cities like Charlotte, quite frankly, cities like New Orleans. And then there's teams that put money into the pot, into revenue sharing. You know, money flows from the West Coast, flows from L.A., flows from San Francisco, flows from New York. It would flow, I think, from Seattle. And so especially if there was an NBA-only arena that potentially would be built. But again, the arena that is being renovated would be NBA quality. But that alone, beyond just the nostalgia of seeing the Sonics back, is a reason to be in Seattle.
Brian, I don't know if you can find any NBA fan or Sonics fan in Seattle that sees any kind of problem with bringing the NBA back here. But obviously, you know, Adam Silver and the rest of the league has held off on committing to any kind of expansion or a timeline. So can you help fans here understand some of the concerns the league has had?
Yeah, because it's an extra two mouths to feed, or, you know, at least one mouth to feed. So, you know, the NBA gets a certain amount of money per year from their media deals and just overall, and it's divided up amongst the 30 teams. And so if you bring in a new team, that share is diluted. And so that's why the expansion fee, frankly, is so high. But even at $2.5 billion over the course of a period of years, you know, the dilution that you have adding 1/32nd, you know, is felt. You know, the Charlotte Bobcats came into the NBA in 2004. They paid a $300 million fee to join the league, and they are paid a full share, which is approaching $100 million a year in television money, which means in just 3 years, the Bobcats, now the Hornets, get back what they put in. And that's money that the other teams don't get. Not only that, but the teams have to pay Charlotte every year. They get, in many years, they've gotten in excess of $20 million a year from their partners in revenue sharing. So the Bobcats are essentially, or, you know, the Hornets are essentially on welfare within the league. And so, like, it wasn't a very good deal. And so that's what the owners get worried about, is they get worried that over the next 20 years, you know, it'll be a bad deal. And that's why Seattle is interesting, because if you're one of those teams that's writing a check in, that means if you're the Golden State Warriors, that's less money that I have to pay in to pay everybody else. And if you're a team like Memphis or a team like Cleveland or a team like Indiana who gets, you know, revenue assistance, it's another team to add to the pot to pay me. So I think that's the thing, is, you know, how, you know, if they can be convinced that Seattle is going to be robust enough to be a payer, to be somebody who is so successfully financially that they're adding to the system, it makes it a little easier. But it's not just as simple as saying, oh, let's bring another team in, this will be great.
He is Brian Windhorst of ESPN NBA coverage there. You can read his work at ESPN.com. Also, a personal recommendation from the show. We love the Brian Windhorst podcast. It's Brian Windhorst in the Hoop Collective. If you aren't already subscribed, go do that now. Thanks so much, Brian.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
All right, let's get to some NFL headlines. Bobby Wagner was named a first-team All-Pro for the sixth time in his career. DK Metcalf and Jamal Adams were both named to the second team. A few other first-team All-Pros on here. Rams defensive tackle Aaron Donald and Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce were unanimous first-team selections. Awesome accomplishment for Bobby Wagner. He now becomes, I think, outside of Aaron Donald, the only two players in the NFL to have at least five consecutive years of first-team All-Pro and Pro Bowler.
That, very impressive for Bobby Wagner. And when you talk about B-Wags and what he means to this franchise, he's one of the greatest players to don a Seahawks uniform. He's one of the greatest defenders to don a Seahawks uniform. And he will be a Hall of Famer. So when you talk about a run, a successful career, 9 seasons in this league, 6-time All-Pro, and he's not done yet. I mean, huge congratulations to Bobby Wagner. And I had a question presented to me on Twitter asking if I thought that Bobby Wagner was the best defender during the Pete Carroll era. You would have to say yes, right? Just in terms of the longevity in which he's been able to sustain his run?
I think that the consistency in longevity is what you'd have to give him. Single greatest season from a Seahawks defender under Pete Carroll would be who? Sherm?
I mean, Sherm's put up a couple of them. Yeah, I mean, he would have to be right up there in that conversation. Earl Thomas, I mean, was playing Hall of Fame level safety type of football.
Mm-hmm.
Cam Chancellor, to me, is a Hall of Famer. Damn. Had his career not cut short, and we'll see if he still is able to make the Hall of Fame through that. But his impact was incredible. You look at Cliff Averill, Michael Bennett, what they did. Chris Clemens, one of his years. But yeah, I mean, probably Richard Sherman in terms of just single greatest seasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say probably over the length of their career in terms of the Pete Carroll era, it's got to be Bobby Wagner. Bobby Wagner's been the mainstay and has been able to continue an insane level of production throughout his time here in Seattle. It's not like he's had one down year or anything like that. He has been outstanding. He's in all 9 seasons here as a Seahawk.
Some Saints news. Bears at Saints is the afternoon game on Sunday. Also Nickelodeon's game. You better believe I'm watching that version of the broadcast. Taking a break from Red Zone to tune into Nickelodeon and see if they have Patrick Starr all over Sean Payton's face. Who knows what's going to happen? Some news for that game. The Saints' top sack leading sacker, defensive end Trey Hendrickson, will miss Sunday's game against the Bears. Now, Saints still widely predicted to win this one. One of the games that is, man, might even be the lock of the weekend, would you say?
Yeah,
neither Chiefs nor Green Bay winning. I'm going to say that Saints over Bears is pretty much everyone's lock of the weekend.
Yeah.
An upset, though, would be nice, although I think that to get that, you'd need maybe an offensive weapon gone for that one, maybe Kamara.
Okay, here's a question for you.
Yeah.
And we had and I asked you this question during the break. Who would you rather face? And I want to get your guys' answer on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line 710-710. Who would you rather go through? The Saints to get to the Saints to have home field advantage for the NFC Championship game?
Okay.
Or would you rather have the upset with the Bears, and then you have to play the Green Bay? You have to play the Green Bay Packers in the NFC Championship at Lambeau.
I would rather get to the championship. So wait, was that the choice? Would you rather host?
No, either way, you get to the championship game. But would you rather face the Green Bay Packers?
Yeah.
In the NFC Championship game, or would you rather have to go through New Orleans first to be able to get home field advantage for the NFC Championship game?
I don't want anything to do with the Packers.
So I guess I'm asking, who would you want to be upset during the playoffs?
Yeah.
Green Bay Packers or the New Orleans Saints? The team that you...
Because one gives you home field advantage. The Packers. Packers are the best team in the NFC. Take them out. It's not going to happen. But presumably it would be the winner of Buccaneers, Washington football, the 5 or 4 seed, go on to play Green Bay. And then Seahawks, if they advance, travel to New Orleans to play the Saints, is what I'm predicting will happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love the Bears to upset, which would mean Seattle, if they advance, would play the Buccaneers or Washington. The Bears travel to Green Bay, but I want Green Bay out of there. I want Green Bay gone.
That's fair. The 206 saying, Jake, that's a loser mentality. We play the best.
No.
we're having a fun question here. If there's one team that you would rather not face, what would it be, the Packers or the Saints? I personally would love to have the opportunity to host the NFC Championship game.
Yes,
that would be incredible. And that is a possibility. Tampa Bay, remember, at the beginning of the season or the middle of the season, they gave Aaron Rodgers and that offense major, major problems because they were able to really generate a lot of pressure on him. I don't know if they could get that done second time around, but that would be incredible at the end of all of this to be able to host an NFC Championship game here in Seattle. That would be pretty sweet.
Now, I didn't get to this story in the timeline. This is another playoff game. Some trash talk from a Steelers player ahead of their matchup against the Browns. Wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster with the coldest dig on record. I am still dead from reading this earlier. Quote from Juju: I think they're still the same Browns teams I play every year. I think they're nameless gray faces. They have a couple good players on their team, but at the end of the day, I don't know. The Browns is the Browns. I am deceased.
Shake my head.
I am deceased.
Seriously, though, Juju, what are you doing?
Did he not learn from his time in Cincinnati?
What are you doing?
Oh, what, give the Browns bulletin board material when they've got a day of practice in?
Yeah, but still, I mean, you give this team an opportunity to get more fired up, more geared up than what they would have had before. It's a real thing. And Juju,
they're already fired up. They hate you.
They do, but Juju Smith-Schuster already had this backfire on him once. And you're telling me that he's going to go out there and do it again? And here's the thing that I have a problem with Juju Smith-Schuster when he's doing all of this is, I'm sorry, man, but you're not the best receiver on your team. You're the third leading receiver on your team. And you're popping off and talking like this. Like, don't get me wrong, he's a good player. But as a team, you're dealing with drama and all the backlash and things like that from opponents, from a guy who is your number two receiver on your team, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I'm having a hard time with this.
He was like, look, if the TikTok video doesn't work, try this on for size. Nameless gray faces. That is harsh.
That's all right. Cold.
Speaking of the Browns, because of a COVID outbreak, they have been incredibly limited with how often they've been able to meet, been able to practice. Guys, they have been able to practice for the first time ahead of their wild card matchup. I cannot think of a more uneven matchup as far as intangible advantages, as far as one team getting to practice, one team having healthy starters mm-hmm. in the Pittsburgh Steelers, and one team bouncing back a week after their starters were playing with their head coach and a couple other players out with one day of practice.
Yeah.
That is going to be this matchup.
That is tough. That is real, real tough. And I feel really bad for the Cleveland Browns because it's honestly, there's nothing you can do about it, but it's just not fair. It's not fair going into the playoffs and playing a game without being able to practice, to be able to be at the facility without your, you know, your full coaching staff. I mean, that's really, really, really tough.
It's awful. Who's the underdog you guys are going most kind of hard for in your rooting interest this weekend?
Washington.
Washington?
Uh-huh.
It might be the Browns for me.
Really?
I think so.
There's another one that I have. It's the Colts to me as well in the AFC. I really want to see
like
a good
Bills,
close
though.
Game. But if I'm talking about from an entertainment value, it would be so fun to be able to watch the Chiefs and the Bills play in the NFC Championship game. But I'm really going to be curious to see how Josh Allen handles that Indianapolis Colts defense. They're not world beaters. They're not like the Rams or Washington or anything that the Seahawks or the 49ers that the Seahawks have had to face lately. But they are a very solid defense that can give Josh Allen potential problems. So we'll see how that one unfolds.
Yeah, I mean, the Bears upsetting the Saints would be advantageous, right? It'd be an easier road for you. And you'd have a chance to host if they were to somehow beat the Packers. I don't see that happening. As far as just long-suffering teams, how do you not go for the Browns? First time in the playoffs since 2002.
Yes.
You weren't even born.
I guess I'm just counting them out, right?
That's your problem.
For me, I just think that the Browns, they just don't really have a chance. Even with Juju Smith-Schuster popping off and saying the things that he's saying.
Nameless gray face.
He's kind of got a point. I just don't really see the Cleveland Browns being able to pull this one off against the Steelers. And so I think for them, it would be fun to root for. I just don't think they got a chance.
All right. Now, there is no underdog in the battle, the weekly trivia battle between Curtis and Jake, because they have been bouncing back and forth in terms of who wins. Jake looking to defend his title for back-to-back wins this week. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Rams, 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 Rams.
What?
Playoff version. Playoff
Wild
version.
Car, baby. Okay.
Winner,
so
go home.
This is our weekly quiz. Fingers crossed. I can't wait to do one next week on the Saints. Let's hope that's what happens. Until then.
Can I just say that I am shocked, utterly shocked at the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line.
Oh, I was going to say this.
Of the trash talk that is coming my way and everybody rooting for Curtis.
Now,
what is going on?
People's champ here.
I love it. I am loving this because I'm loving people getting so into this challenge that they're like choose your fighter style listening to it. My favorite has been someone saying, you got this, DJ. Destroy Jake.
Excuse me? Beg pardon?
DJ? How can you compare DJ?
When has DJ ever been on this show?
Never.
Never.
Oh, DJ. All right. Shout out to Kyle Brown for writing up these questions and helping out this week. Okay, Rams, Rams, Rams.
So
Jake,
that doesn't
do you
mean,
want to defer?
That doesn't mean we have to say.
Oh, no.
There's a question about something that you have said during the week.
Absolutely does mean that. Jake, do you want to go first or defer to the second question you won last week?
Since I left Curtis back in 2020,
that's
last
right.
week, I am
sure
gonna go,
21's better.
I am going to go first,
Jake. Question number one, when was the last time the Seahawks lost a playoff game at home?
last time the Seahawks lost a playoff game at home?
These are tough questions from Kyle Brown.
Oh, man.
This is going to be a tough one. Just like it'll be a tough game for the Seahawks and the Rams. You see, it's a theme.
Pretty sure I know this one.
Wow. I don't. I'm going to say, do I have to know the opponent or just the year?
Just the year. I'll allow just the year.
I'm going to say,
I would give
2011?
You
2011? Yeah,
then. Did you want to guess? You're not going to get
was
the point.
It was the 2005 playoffs against the Rams.
Yeah, well, 2004
season. Yeah.
Yep.
Bobby Engram dropped a touchdown in the end zone right at the right as time expired.
All right, no points for Curtis, but no points for Jake. Curtis.
Just had to flex on
Just had to flex. Question number two, the Seahawks offense scored 30-plus points per game for four straight weeks to start the season. How many times have they done it since?
They definitely did it against the Bills. They definitely did it against the
Kyle,
Jets.
Kyle, man. Good. It's,
You did it against Cardinals. I'm going to say just those three times.
What were your answers?
I said the Jets, Bills, and the first Cardinals game.
How about you get your own question right,
wow.
huh?
The 49ers, Curtis. That first 49ers
game. Right. I've got a feeling that this is going to be like
this is gonna
the,
be
Seahawks,
a low
the Seahawks Rams game.
Out.
A
lot of buzzers.
Tomorrow. All right, guys, let's go. Question three. Jake, we covered this week that potential Rams starting quarterback John Wolford played his college ball at Wake Forest before playing in the AAF. But which other NFL team has he spent time with?
The New York Jets.
Yes.
I mean,
boom!
Yeah.
A Jets quarterback fraternity.
Yeah,
J-E-T-S.
Jets.
Oh, yes.
That is correct. Wolford signed as an undrafted free agent and spent the 2018 preseason with the New York Jets. 1-0. Curtis, you can get on the board and tie it up here. Question four, which offensive weapon leads the Rams in touchdowns scored this season?
Ooh.
Mm. Is it Robert Woods?
It is wide receiver Robert Woods. Curtis, tying it up. Malcolm Brown, Daryl Henderson, and Tyler Higbee each have five apiece. Jake, for two. Well, not for 2 points, but to get to the number two. True or false, Russell Wilson was sacked twice as many times as Jared Goff this season. You got a 50-50 chance.
I'm going to say that is correct.
Yes, Goff was sacked 23 times, Wilson 47 times. More than twice as much, but
yeah.
Can't split a half number. Whatever.
No,
don't worry about
I got the question right. That's all that matters.
Yeah, okay. Curtis, got to get this one right.
Stacey.
Hang in the game here. You got to respond
go.
With Pressure, a, with
go.
A
Pressure
touchdown.
Is on.
The Seahawks set a couple franchise receiving records this year. Tyler Lockett for receptions with 100. DK Metcalf for yards with over 1,300. But who holds the franchise record for touchdowns in a season? Touchdown catches in a season?
I don't think this man did anything wrong. Is it Jimmy Graham?
No!
No,
no it's not! Oh.
He had like
was
11.
It because I was smiling?
Is
he had 10.
Is it Doug Baldwin? He had like
it's
15.
Doug Baldwin.
Yeah.
Doug Baldwin had 14 touchdowns in 2015. Went on a tear in the second half
this.
Of that season. Lockett and Metcalf had
Come
10
on,
apiece,
Curtis.
Which ties future Hall of Famer Jimmy Graham at 10, so they could chase him down
future
with
Hall
a deep playoff run. Jake, you can pull ahead here.
Jimmy
it's
Graham's
currently
still in the playoffs, by
currently
the way.
2-1. Yeah, Jimmy Graham is in the playoffs playing the Saints. That's an interesting matchup for him. Jacob,
yes.
This is a question that required that you be listening to me earlier to
yes.
something I said.
Yes.
But here's the thing. I've said a couple things today. Lots of great points, so who knows? Bit of a wild card.
Yeah, that's why it's so hard to keep up.
Okay. When was the last time the Rams scored a touchdown on offense?
The last time they scored a touchdown on offense, it was two games ago. Do I have to know the opponent?
The week and the opponent. I mean, two
the
games.
The 49ers? Is this
two,
the 49ers?
2 games ago.
2 games ago? Oh. 2 games ago.
Like, so your answer is the 49ers 2 games ago.
Oh, that would be 3 games ago.
3 games ago?
3 games ago.
Who was 2 games? Oh, that's your answer? 3 games ago?
3 games ago. Yeah, 49ers.
They played the Seahawks 2 games ago.
Yeah, I know. I realized
Week
that.
Week 15 in a loss versus the Jets. The last touchdown was a 3-yard pass to Tyler Higbee. Curtis, you can tie it up here, and we can send this game into sudden death overtime.
I absolutely can.
But he won't.
Unfortunately, Curtis, this is a very difficult question.
Yeah, it is.
That is not multiple choice. Yeah. It is not true or false.
Like
you just got to know.
I want to, yeah.
You want the toughest.
Question.
Well,
let's go.
This is it. This is it.
I'm not backing. I want the smoke.
For you
as
want
Jalen
all?
Ramsey
send those
said.
Stainless gray faces.
Yeah. Curtis, don't you try to not put DK on me.
Curtis, right? For the tie, if you get this wrong, Jake wins for a second week in a row.
It's not happening.
Curtis.
Here we go.
Pete Carroll has faced the Rams 22 times as a head coach of the Seahawks.
Oh, boy.
What is his record in those games?
Man.
Wow.
That's very
no multiple choice?
I'll
22
do,
times.
I'll do. Ruthless. Should I do multiple choice? That's really tough. There's so many different combinations. I'm going to do multiple choice. I'll do, does he have a, I'll do three. Does he have a losing record, a winning record, or... Does he have a 500 record?
I believe he's got a losing record against the Rams.
Yes!
Oh, no, he's at 500.
500.
He's 11-11 against the Rams. It's just
wow.
Most recently that stretch. So congratulations, Jake Heaps.
Woo!
Second week in a row. Curtis, you need to beat him. His ego is just going to grow and grow and grow until he walks in here. And
we're
he
going
just...
we're going after that Lombardi trophy.
We got to hope the Seahawks stay alive next week because can we do a game show without the Seahawks playing?
You cannot let this end with Jake and back-to-back wins. You need to come back and get him for Saints.
After he had just said, I want all that smoke,
Not only do the Seahawks need to advance, you need to advance. You need the Seahawks to win more than almost anyone else, I think.
I mean, my paycheck still clears. So.
We sum it up next.
That's great.
But wait, it's over.
There come a wavy man.
It's time to sum it up with Jake and Stacy.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back!
Turning hand to Lynch left side. Finds a little bit of a hole. Keeps his legs moving. He's across the 40. Midfield. 45. He's on the run, Lynch. 40. Pushes him at 35. Look at him go. He's down to 20. 15. He could go. He is going to go. Touchdown, Seahawks. Oh, my word! A 67-yard run! Marshawn Lynch, unbelievable!
Playing wild card highlights all day on Jake and Stacy. That
Let's
is
go.
Our last one of the day, and frankly, the best one. One of my favorite moments, if not my favorite moment from a Seahawks wild card game. I still remember where I was that day. I was not in person at the game. I was watching it from Pacific Place Mall when it was still more of a mall. And I was on the top floor, and that's the restaurant floor. And there are TVs in every single one of those restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, every single person in this huge mall stands up and starts screaming. And people were like yelling down the different floors at each other. It was pandemonium. I loved it.
That was absolutely insane. That game was nuts. And the Seahawks had no chance going into that game.
None.
They had zero business being there. They were 7-9, facing the defending world champs. I mean, that was such an unbelievable moment. And clearly in that moment, a star, a mega star was born in Marshawn Lynch, beast mode. And one of the things that still to this day, when I watch that clip, that just gives me chills and goosebumps is one, when Marshawn Lynch just throws off Tracy Porter,
so
just chucks him. And then the last part is literally the TV. It is so loud in that building that the cameras are shaking.
Yeah.
They are shaking. It was so incredible. And, that was so fun. And Chris and Needhamclaw saying that being at that game in person was incredible. I hugged complete strangers that game. and I bet. I can only imagine being there live, but I cannot wait to see this team continue to create great moments And I believe that they will be able to create great and special moments tomorrow against the Rams. And I'm hopeful, Stacey, that they will go out and make a statement about this team. And it may not be pretty, and everyone around the country may continue to doubt the Seattle Seahawks. But coming back to the idea that Greg Olsen had in an interview with Wyman and Bob, he talked about how they've won every style of game imaginable. Mm-hmm. And that gives them a tremendous amount of confidence that no matter what happens, they have the ability and the confidence they will win at the end of it.
Anniversary of that one, by the way, that was on January 8th, 2011. Saints were favored by 10 heading into that game. Seahawks are about a field goal favorite in this one, which is essentially a wash, a toss-up, because they're at home where you'd normally get a field goal advantage there. Anyways, so when I'm looking at this team, they are a much better offense than the 2010 Seahawks. No offense, 2010 Seahawks. But there's still a lot of doubt, a lot of worry, just like you said. And I got to be honest, I'm one of those people too. And it's not because I don't think the Seahawks will win. I predicted that they would win earlier this show in our Bold Take segment. But this defense is really, really good, this Rams defense.
Mm-hmm.
And this Seahawks offense has cooled off a lot. And Pete Carroll explained that part of that might have been from turnovers, mistakes, that they have been fantastic. They won every game where they won the turnover battle and have lost typically when they've lost the turnover battle.
Mm-hmm.
Common denominator there, easy to understand. Another reason he said that they've cooled off is that they've had to game plan around great defenses in order to take away the weapons of those defenses. They've sacrificed a little bit, whether that be explosive plays,
right,
riskier plays downfield. I think that that's why I'm expecting that'll be the strategy against the Rams. The Rams are so good that I can't help but be nervous heading into it.
Right. And the way that Pete described it, here, let's play cut number two for everybody to listen to this. Pete Carroll talked about why Russ's numbers are down a bit and that they would love to see more big plays, but there's a reason why you haven't.
We have played some games kind of the way we wanted to play them, and that wasn't to just try to, you know, stretch the field with the throwing game. We want to win the game, and we want to take care of the football and make sure that we're in control of the rhythm of the game as a team. And I felt like we got that done. But we'd like to get our explosive plays back up. You know, that's been a little bit different for us, and we got to look for opportunities. You know, but we don't want to force those. You know, we just want to take them as they come to us and make sure that we're executing really well.
They will take calculated shots in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, do they hit? And you brought up a great stat that the Rams are the best defense in the league.
You thought that would be on the trivia
game. I did. In not giving up big plays. And so you look at that combination, and it's about how can you control the game in a positive way as a team. That's the way Pete Carroll views this. And particularly when you have a defense that's playing the way that they are, you want to limit the opportunities to put the ball at risk. You were fine. Like the last time around, you're fine with it being 6-6 at halftime, because overall, as a team, you are dictating the way that this game is being played. Because in Sean McVay's world, he doesn't want to play a 6-6 type of game. He wants it to be more of a 20-30 point type of game, because that means his offense is playing better and they're more in a rhythm. If you can get the Rams offense out of a rhythm, I don't care how good this Rams defense is, they're not invincible. As we talked about yesterday, they are not a machine. They are mere men. And this Seahawks offense really is the key to this game.
Yeah.
How they play, how they're able to finish down the stretch in the third and fourth quarter, to me, is going to be the most important thing about this game. And what this offense has shown, and Russell Wilson has shown over the last 2 weeks, is that he's been outstanding in those areas. I don't want to see them play rope-a-dope. I don't want to see them start slow, but I'm also not going to panic if that's the case.
I'm going to spring something on you guys. I'll answer too, but I did not talk about this while we were in the break, so it's a surprise, but we have talked about this, and I want to ask the question because I think you've already said the answer, and I want everyone to be watching for the same thing. So the question is, the Seahawks win this weekend if what? If blank. I'm going to steal one of those two things. Mine is if they don't turn the ball over.
They don't turn the ball over.
They don't. Right. Seahawks win this weekend if they do not turn the ball over, because I think that in order to win for the Rams, they need all the help they can get, as in the game they had last week when the defense got a score. That defense doesn't get a score. That defense doesn't give them extra possessions. I don't think the offense is good enough to overcome Seattle. I think Seattle wins if they do not turn the ball over or win the turnover battle.
I fully agree. I believe that the Seahawks will win if this Seahawks offense can dictate the terms of this game. And I believe that comes through tempo, that comes through being able to find effective ways to run the ball with Chris Carson, to be able to sustain drives so that you can get deeper into your playbook, that you can get Chris Carson 20 to 25 touches in this game rather than 15 touches, that you can give more opportunities for this offense to march down the field, and Russell Wilson to control the line of scrimmage in terms of how they operate, getting themselves in the right positions. And yes, Curtis,
there you
it's
go.
Playoff time right
there
here,
you
baby.
Go.
It's playoff time. Let's turn this up a little bit. We need the people to feel this. It's playoff time. Win or go home. This is the first game. The Rams are the first roadblock in the Seahawks' way to get to the Lombardi Trophy. I cannot wait. I cannot wait to watch the Seahawks move them out of their way. It's going to happen. I expect a Seahawks win, and I predict it's going to be a 24-point game for the Seahawks, and this Seahawks defense is going to limit the Rams to under 10 points.
Quick answer, Curtis, because I'm going to want Saints next week for the quiz so you can have a chance to avenge yourself. Jake's already looking
That's
sideways.
The most important thing.
That's the most important thing. Seahawks win if blank. Last word.
They scored 2 touchdowns.
Got it. Score 2 touchdowns. That's all you need. Jake says get to 24, control tempo, don't turn the ball over. All of that important. We will be back Monday. We better be talking about a win.
I'm feeling
good about it. After the Seahawks win this weekend, wild card game kicks off at 1:40 p.m. Pacific time. Don't go anywhere. Wyman and Bob joins you next.